To the latest installment of one of the fastest growing parapolitical podcasts out in podcast land. Yes, you are now tuned into the Paranormal Patriot. Thank you for joining me this week. As always, wearing the tinfoil hat, my name is Tom Velasquez. Thank you very much for joining me. I hope all my listeners had a very happy, very restful, very relaxing Thanksgiving with family and friends. I hope you all had too much to eat like I did. Starting Monday, I have to go on a very big crash diet. It is just beneficial. We got a Black Friday deal, and we are going to Mexico in March. And I know what you're saying. What are you doing, Tom? You're an idiot. Going to Mexico? From everything I hear, as long as you don't leave the resorts, you're good. So, fingers crossed. But I've got to lose a ton of weight before I get to Mexico. So, I'm going to pound it out this weekend, eat all the leftovers. And then, starting Monday, It's diet time. I hate diet time. But enough about me and my weight woes. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. I hope it was relaxing for you because, lo and behold, Christmas is right around the corner. Thanksgiving is very late this year. And that means there's less than 1 month till Christmas Day. Yours truly needs to really start thinking about Christmas shopping real soon. Because I'm going to blink and it's going to be here and I'm going to be like, whoa-oh. There's a problem. So, again, thank you for listening. But what I wanted to do on this show, there's not really a lot of paranormal, supernatural conspiracies surrounding Thanksgiving, so I tried to tie in a show that works with Thanksgiving. And this is what I came up with. Now, this is a subject that I have delved into a little bit and thought about it, and this may actually go hand in hand with my diet. But I wanted to talk to you guys about, and I'm going to give you the pros and cons of this, which is something I really don't do a lot, but I'm going to give you the pros and cons for and against. But I wanted to talk to you guys about whether we as humans, are we designed to eat meat? So I'm going to go over a synopsis of articles that I read for and against that. I'm going to give you the for, yes, we are designed to eat, and I'm going to give you the against. No, we are not designed to eat meat. And then we'll talk about it briefly, and then we'll move on with the show. Now, normally I start the show with listener comments. This week I'm not going to do that. I'm going to save that till the end because I had two comments this week, and they happen to be paranormal encounters from two of my listeners. So we're going to change it up this week. I'm going to take a break here. We're going to come back. I'm going to go over the main subject of the show. We'll take another break, and then we'll go into the listener comments, the paranormal encounters. So, bear with me. This will be a very informative show for you, because as I say, I don't do a lot of for and against. I don't do a lot of pro and con on here, but this is something that I really don't know the answer to, because to me, both sides are pretty compelling. So, listen to this and decide for yourself. So, sit back, relax, open that mind. You are now tuned in to one of the fastest growing parapolitical podcasts on the planet. You're listening to the Paranormal Patriot. I just want to take some time. I want to feel okay, alright. I feel so anxious, cause you're fake love. I don't know what to do, I just want to let go. I hear my phone, it's you. The Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society, the Sioux Events Incorporated, and Keewatin Casino are very proud to present the largest paranormal gathering of its kind in the Midwest. The 11th Annual Michigan Paranormal Convention, August 27th through the 29th, 2020. The Michigan Paranormal Convention will yet again bring the biggest names of the paranormal industry to Michigan's oldest city, Sault Ste. Marie. At the Kiewit Inn Casino's Dreammaker Theater, experts and television stars will be on hand to cover such topics as paranormal investigating, psychic abilities, demonology, and ufology. Convention goers will be able to meet some of their favorite television paranormal investigators. For 2.5 days, you can join the biggest names in the industry as they speak on today's hottest topic, the paranormal. So again, August 27th through the 29th, 2020, the 11th Annual Michigan Paranormal Convention. For more information, call 1-800-647-2858. And when you get there, tell them the Paranormal Patriot sent you. Elgin Hauntings Haunted Holiday Bus, a festive, frightful foray into the haunted history of Elgin. BYOB on their cozy coach bus to steady your holiday nerves as you hear tales of the Elgin Casket Company, Bluff City Cemetery, and Channing School. Saturday, December 21st, 2019, from 7 to 10 at the Elgin Public House, 219 East Chicago Street in Elgin, Illinois. $29 gives you a tour of Elgin's haunted history, as well as holiday cheer. Again, Saturday, December 21st, from 7 to 10, Elgin Public House, 219 East Chicago Street in Elgin, Illinois. Be there for Elgin Hauntings Haunted Holiday Bus. Guys, so lucky. You see, when you listen to this show, you get new things that nobody else has ever heard, just like that. That is a little snippet from one of our new songs we're going to be releasing, Multiple Myselfs and Tommy V. Yeah, nobody else has heard it beside Multiple Myself and I, and you just heard a little snippet, so you are in the know more so than anybody else. But now let's get to the good stuff. So again, Thanksgiving's gone. We've all ate an abundance of food, I hope, and now we sit here and look at the consequences on the scale. But we eat, most of us eat turkey, some of us eat ham, chicken. I know people that order pizza in. I don't, whatever you eat, ask yourself this. The human body and human beings in general, are we designed and were we designed to be meat eaters, or were we designed to be herbivores or plant eaters? So I went through and I took a bunch of pros and cons and for and against this particular subject and summarized it. So you're going to hear first the reasons why people think that we are meat eaters. And they're, I'll be honest with you guys, and trust me, I love my meat. I can't eat red meat. I can't eat it anymore, but, you know, I love my chicken. I love my turkey, venison, sorry, PETA, but I love meat. But I'm looking at this, and in everything I read, for the most part, is, meaning everything I've read and kind of just absorbed, for being a meat eater is kind of hearsay, is kind of this is what we think, and everything against us being meat eaters. There's actually some scientific proof that goes along with nature. Nature's neat. So here is where I came up, and I'm going to read from all my notes, and I've got some stuff from articles that I just copied and pasted in here, so bear with me. But a new study in Nature, this is a magazine apparently, it makes it clear not only did processing and eating meat come naturally to humans, it's entirely possible that without an early diet that included large amounts of animal protein, we wouldn't even have become human, or at least not the modern, verbal, intelligent humans we are. Now, again, I want to preface this by saying there's a lot of evolutionary, we evolved into this. So a lot of this stems from us being apes, and we've evolved from apes. Take it how you want. If you believe in evolution, then we evolved from apes. If you don't believe in evolution, you can still look at this and say, yeah, there's some strange things that don't make sense here. And also, all these numbers are purely man-made. This is what we think. And, you know, whether or not they're true is up to everybody's discretion. But I'm just going to use the numbers that they gave in the articles just for the sake of argument. You know, I don't think we are nearly as old, or this planet is nearly as old as we think it is. Again, this is all what we up here in our noggin, our highest intelligence humans, have said, oh, yep, that's how old we are. We've carbon dated it. Well, we don't have any proof that carbon dating is accurate. We can go and say, well, I can prove that that's, you know, a million years old. How? Well, we go back and check the carbon data and all that good stuff. How do we know that's right? Because that's a man-made concept. We don't know it's right, but for the sake of argument, I'm just going to use the numbers, and we'll go from there. So it was about 2.6 million years ago that meat first became a significant part of the pre-human diet. Now, being an herbivore, or a plant eater, that was easy. Fruits and vegetables, they don't run away, but they're not terribly calorie dense. In other words, they don't sustain you like protein, meat does. A better alternative were the so-called, and this is from articles I've read, I've never heard of this term, but I'll use it, underground storage organs, or USOs. Those are root foods like beets and yams and potatoes. They pack a bigger nutritional punch, but they're not terribly tasty, at least not raw, and they're very hard to chew. Now, according to Harvard University evolutionary biologist Catherine Zink and Daniel Lieberman, they're the authors of the Nature paper. Proto-humans eating enough root food to stay alive would have had to gone through up to 15 million chewing cycles a year. And this is when I looked at all of the, how do I want to put it, all of the information as to why we were designed to be meat eaters, a lot of it had to do with this quote-unquote chew cycle. And I have a hard time figuring out why that is such a big deal. But they said, again, proto-humans who were eating enough root food to stay alive would have had to go through up to 15 million chewing cycles a year. And they say that is where the meat stepped in. It ran and it scurried in to save the day. Prey that had been killed and then prepared by either slicing, pounding, or flaking provided a much more calorie-rich meal, but had less chewing than root foods do. It was boosting nutrition levels overall. Now, in order to determine how much primitive humans saved by eating a diet that included processed animal protein, Zink and Lieberman recruited 24 decidedly modern humans and fed them samples of three kinds of OSUs, remember what those are, jewel yams, carrots, and beets. And they gave them one kind of meat, goat, raw, but screened to ensure the absence of any pathogens. Using electromyography sensors, they then measured how much energy the muscles of the head and jaw had to exert to chew and swallow the samples either whole or prepared one of the three ancient ways. Now, on average, they found that it required from 39% to 46% less force to chew and swallow processed meat than processed root foods. Slicing worked best for meat. Not only was it especially easy to chew, but it also reduced the size of the individual particles in any swallow, making them more digestible. Again, I have a little bit, I'll tell you about the little conflict I have on that statement. For OSUs, the beets, the yams, and whatever, the root foods, pounding was best. A delightful fact that one day would lead to the mashed potato. But overall, Zink and Lieberman concluded a diet that was one-third animal protein and two-third OSUs would have saved early humans about 2 million chews per year, a 13% reduction, meaning they would be saving time and energy just to get the dinner down. Now, that mattered for reasons that went beyond just giving our ancient ancestors a few extra free hours in their day. A brain is a very nutritionally demanding organ. If you want one to grow big, eating at least some meat will provide you far more calories with far less effort than a meatless menu will. What's more, while animal muscle eaten straight from the carcass requires a lot of ripping and tearing, which demands big sharp teeth and a powerful bite, once we learn to process meat, we could do away with some of that, developing smaller teeth and less pronounced and muscular jaw. This, in turn, may have led to other changes in the skull and the neck, favoring a larger brain and more advanced speech organs. Whatever selection pressures favored these shifts, the researchers wrote, they would not have been able to process without increased meat consumption combined with food processing technology. So again, this segment, this for being a meat-eating species is going to be rather short because of the fact that there's really not a lot of proof and a lot of evidence that we are designed to eat meat. Now, it could be the whoever's writing the papers and the people that are, the vegans, the PETA people of the world, they have better researchers, better scientists, whatever you want to call them, but they have a more compelling and a much more in-depth reason why we are not designed to eat meat. Now, this whole thing that I just went over basically said, we couldn't have survived, or we couldn't have grown, because meat gives us more protein, which our brain needs. That may be true. It very well may be true. But their biggest thing that they're standing on is the number of chew cycles per year. And I don't understand. Listen, it doesn't take that much to chew. And when you're chewing, you're releasing the nutrients from these vegetables and these plants into your body. So, in the biggest thing I took out of this, in this whole report from Nature from these two Harvard doctors or whatever they are, was, well, you chew them or you slice them up into littler pieces and it's easier to digest. All right, listen. If you eat a pound of meat, it doesn't matter if those are in strips, if those are in chunks, or if you just suck down a pound of meat, you're still digesting a pound of meat. It doesn't matter how it's prepared for you. Your body still has to digest it. So that, to me, a pound is a pound is a pound. Just because you slice it doesn't make it any less of a pound. You're still digesting a pound of meat. Now, again, I cannot eat red meat. My wife cannot eat red meat. And the reason for that is I have a liver issue. My wife has a very bad liver issue that we have a much, much harder time processing red meat. With that being said, we as a human being, or anybody listening, whenever we eat meat, our body, it takes a long time for us to digest that meat. And a lot of that stays in our intestines and in our colon, and it builds up and it builds up and it just sits there and it doesn't do anything. It's not giving us any nutritional value. Now, I've had numerous, way too many to count and way too many to be proud of, colonoscopies done on me. And what they gave, it used to be Fleet until they found out, oh, that's bad for you. Thanks, doctors. Then they give you the stuff and it makes you clean yourself out. And I got to tell you, there's stuff coming out of you and it's all liquid and it breaks it down. It just dissolves it essentially. Some of the things that came out of me when I'm taking that stuff, it's nasty. But you know what? I feel better after that. I feel cleaner in a way. I mean, I just don't feel that bloated feeling because all that stuff sits in your intestines and in your gut and in your colon, and it builds and builds and builds. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I don't claim to be one, and I don't want to be one. But I also am I'm a thoughtful guy. I think of these things all the time. Now, early humans, they were much more active than we are today, right? They had to constantly be doing things. They had to hunt. They had to forage. They had to build shelter. They had to do things in order to survive. So they were constantly on the move. If we were designed to eat meat, our bodies, in my opinion, would not take so long to process and digest this meat. The reason I say that is because as you're digesting it, the energy it gives you is much, much slower. It's released much, much slower. Where as you're eating these fruits and vegetables, it's bam, it's in your system. You're feeling it. And again, I love meat. I do. I love to eat meat. I used to rip on vegetarians, but you know, I did a lot of research these past couple weeks on this in preparation for this show, and there's really not a good conclusive reason why humans were designed to eat meat. And it's really kind of scary because that's what we've known. That's what we've done our whole lives, and for centuries we've eaten meat, but I don't know. So we're going to take a really, really, really quick break here. We're going to come back, and I'm going to tell you the longer side of why we were not designed to eat meat. And here's my issue again. You go to all these sites, and they say, this is why we should eat meat, because this is why. It gives your brain protein. It gives us protein. It helped us develop. Everything revolves around evolution. That's if you believe in evolution. But when you go to these websites that say, this is why we should not eat meat, they have facts. It's not just, this is our opinion, this is what scientists say. It's facts. This is why we are not designed to eat meat. This. And you're going to learn about it now. So stay with me, because I don't want to say I shouldn't eat meat. Really, I don't. I don't want to say it at all, because I love meat. I love eating, honestly, I love eating horribly. But the truth is, I'm kind of leaning towards maybe we're not supposed to. I'll tell you why next segment. Stay with me. It's very, very interesting. Sit back, relax, open that mind. Open it even farther. You're going to need to. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot, and I will be right back.
I'm sitting by the wayside, waiting on a good time, when I see you from across the room. Sipping whiskey from a wine glass, pouring from your own flask, when you look up and you see me too. I'm not one for chasing, that might be changing. I was sitting by the wayside, waiting on a good time when I met you. It feels like gravity.
Hey everybody, this is Tom Velasquez, the host of The Paranormal Patriot, which can be heard every Wednesday from 3:30 to 4:30 on Coming Right Up. Are you intrigued by the paranormal? Do conspiracies excite you? Do you like to talk about ghosts, UFOs, or cryptids, or just politics in general? If so, my show, The Paranormal Patriot, is for you. Tune in every Wednesday from 3:30 to 4:30 on Coming Right Up.
I don't know, what to say. Tell me how you feel the same. Cause I don't even know your name. I know I want to. I saw you there across the room. Doing things beautiful too. Finally my eyes met you, and you came over. And now I never ever feel like this.
Okay, so as I said, this list is going to be decidedly longer because there is much more evidence that we are not designed to eat meat than there is that we are designed to eat meat. Again, most of the evidence stating that we are designed to eat meat from everywhere I went revolved around the fact that this is what science says. This is what we think. This is what we believe. when you look at why we're not supposed to eat meat, yeah, there is that out there. But there's also proof that we are not designed to eat meat. So, again, basic anatomical comparisons show that people have much more in common with herbivores than carnivores. Just look at an adult's mouth, okay, let alone a child's. That mouth shows the opening is too small for anything but relatively small pieces of food. We can't even swallow things whole. We must chew them finely and mix them with saliva before a ball of food will slide down our throat. In contrast, carnivores, such as cats, tear off chunks of food and swallow them almost immediately. Our teeth are much better suited for eating starches, fruits, and vegetables, not tearing and chewing flesh. What many refer to as our canine teeth are nothing at all like the sharp blades of true carnivore teeth designed for processing meat. Our jaws can open and close as well as move forward, backward, and side to side. This is ideal for biting off pieces of plant matter and then grinding them down with our flat molars. Now, in contrast, carnivores' lower jaws have very limited side-to-side motion. They are fixed only to open and close, which adds strength and stability to their powerful bite. Now let's go through the body. From the top to the bottom, human digestive systems have evolved to efficiently process plant foods. Digestion, it begins in the mouth with a salivary enzyme called amylase. I think I said that right. Its sole purpose is to break down complex carbohydrates from plant foods and convert them to simple sugars. As there are no carbohydrates in meat, true carnivores don't need this enzyme. Their salivary glands don't make it. The stomach juices of meat-eating animals are highly acidic. They have to be, so that when they break down the large quantities of muscle and bone materials they eat, it digests them much faster. Now, much lower concentrations of stomach acid are needed to digest starches, vegetables, and fruits. Weight for weight, plant protein requires about half the amount of hydrochloric acid to digest it compared to animal protein. It is also digested in half the time. That goes back to what I was talking about before. You're digesting this stuff and it gets into your system much faster. When you digest meat, we don't have that hydrochloric acid, the amount of hydrochloric acid to digest it quickly. Now, vegans and vegetarians have fewer peptic ulcers than meat eaters, mainly because their plant-based diets are easier to digest. Now, that may be up for speculation, but that's what I read on a lot of sites. The human intestine is long and coiled, much like that of apes, cows, and horses. That makes digestion slow, allowing time to break down and absorb the nutrients from plant foods. In contrast, the intestine of a carnivore, such as a cat, is short, straight, and tubular. That means that flesh can be digested very rapidly and the remnants excreted quickly before they begin to rot. Again, we are not meant, from what I'm reading and what I'm understanding, we are not meant to have this meat sitting in our body a long time. The difference in transit time, which is the time it takes for food to make its way from the mouth to the anus to be excreted, between humans and carnivores is what really brings the anatomical differences home. Humans, even though those on a high-fiber diet, have an average transit time of almost 41 hours. Now, in contrast, the average transit time in a pure carnivore, such as the mink or fox, is just 2.4 hours. That means that when people eat meat, it has plenty of time to rot and cause the production of cancer-causing agents. Whoa, there's something to think about. How about this? We, as humans, cannot make vitamin C. We need it in our diet to have vitamin C. Carnivores and omnivores, they produce it naturally. Now let's finally take a look at the external differences. Our hands are made for gathering plants, not ripping flesh. We cool ourselves by sweating like most other plant-eating animals rather than panting like carnivores. We drink by sipping, not by lapping our tongues in water like a cat or a dog. So let's talk cholesterol. It is well known that too much cholesterol is harmful to the human body. What is less widely known is that cholesterol is only found in animal foods and not plant foods. Listen to this. Meat-eating animals have an unlimited capacity to process and excrete cholesterol from their bodies. For example, you could feed a cat egg yolks all day and he or she would excrete all of it, never suffering from a buildup of cholesterol. On the other hand, people, like other plant-eating animals' livers, have a very limited capacity for cholesterol removal. Most people have great difficulty eliminating the amounts of cholesterol that they take in from eating animal products like dairy, meat, eggs, stuff like that. We were made to consume plant foods that were containing no cholesterol. Therefore, we never needed a highly efficient cholesterol eliminating system. Tell me that doesn't strike a bell with you, because it really did with me. We have a cholesterol problem. Now, I understand you're getting two sides. There's some people that say, oh, cholesterol's horrible for you. There's a good and a bad cholesterol. And then there's some people that say, oh, cholesterol's fine. No big deal. There's a lot of growing evidence that states that cholesterol is bad for humans. With that being said, cholesterol is only there when we eat animal foods, meat, dairy, eggs. Our bodies were not designed to get rid of that, like a carnivore's. Let's go into the beginnings of meat eating. Now, meat eating began in the last, and again, these numbers are purely skeptical, 1.5 million years with the advent of the Homo erectus, who lived until 300 million years ago. However, the species was still a largely plant-eating animal. So in other words, Homo erectus, if let's just say it lived to be 80 years old. For the first 65 years of its life, it was a plant-eating Homo erectus. It was only the last 15 years that they went into meat eating, if that makes sense to you. You know, they lived 300,000 years ago during the course of its life. Let's take the equivalent of 65 years. It was a plant eater. The last 20% of its life, of its lifespan of Homo erectus, was a meat-eating being. Now, according to the people who, let's just call them what they are, vegans, vegetarians, PETA, those type of people, they say that we were never meant to eat meat or dairy. They say humans only began consuming these products 6,000 years ago. They say our bodies are not designed to eat flesh and our health is suffering because of it. Once we exclude animal products from our diets, our own health, our planet's health, okay, here we get into the, oh my gosh, the planet, and billions of lives of animals will be better for it. Okay, so we're going to have an animal overpopulation issue. I get it. But really, to me, all of this makes sense. And I'm gonna just go over a list that I made up, and I had some help from the internet. Thanks, internet. But it's going to talk about carnivores and herbivores, and then we're going to put where humans fit in that. So for a carnivore, the facial muscles, they are reduced to allow wide mouth gape. In other words, they can open that mouth really loud, really, really wide. You ever seen a dog or a cat yawn? You're just amazed that they can even get their mouth shut again. It's like their jaw is going to dislocate. But that's what they do. They have this wide open gape. It's because their facial muscles, they're not really developed. Now, an herbivore has a well-developed facial muscle system. Humans, it's well-developed also. I mean, our facial muscles, look at us, frown, smile, grin, We have a limitless amount of facial expressions and facial muscles that we can use, and it's because they're well developed. The jaw type of a carnivore is angled. It's not expanded. Herbivores have an expanded angle. Think about it. Cat, dog, crocodile, they have an angled long jaw type. It's to get in and just rip that flesh away. Well, as an herbivore, you don't need that. You need to just put that plant in your mouth and chew it up. What is it? What do humans have? Is it long or is it kind of expanded? Well, humans have an expanded angle. Jaw joint location. Now, on a carnivore, the jaw joint location is on the same plane as the molar teeth. On an herbivore, it's above the plane of the molars. Anybody want to venture a guess where it is on humans? Yeah, it's above the plane of the molars. Let's look at the jaw motion for a carnivore. The jaw motion is shearing. It has minimal side-to-side motion. You ever look at a shark or an alligator or even a cat or dog? When they're tearing at flesh, what are they doing? They're not moving their jaws from side to side. They're shaking their head back and forth because that they don't have that side-to-side jaw movement. An herbivore, they don't have the shear. They have good side-to-side, front-to-back motion. Same thing with a human. They have no shear. They have good side-to-side and front-to-back motion. It's so we can grind those plants up on our molars. Now, let's look at the mouth opening versus the head size. And I kind of touched on this. When you see a cat or a dog open its mouth when it's yawning, it's just like, wow, look at that. Look at a snake. A snake can dislocate its jaw if it needs to. But if you look at an herbivore, they don't have that. They can't just expand that jaw real wide. What about a human? Humans can't do it. It's more like a herbivore. Let's look at the incisor teeth. On a canine or a carnivore, they're short and pointed. On an herbivore, they're broad, flattened, and spade-shaped. Lo and behold, on a human, they're broad, flattened, and spade-shaped. Are we seeing a trend here? Let's look at the canines. Everybody talks about the canine teeth. Yeah, humans, they have that canine teeth so they can rip that flesh. Look at a cat and a dog's canines. It's like a vampire. I guess you could call a vampire maybe a carnivore, but canines on carnivores are long, sharp, and curved. So when they bite into you, they are able to pull that back, and with that curve, the meat doesn't slip out. It grips that meat and just pulls it out. And then that side-to-side motion comes in where they rip the flesh and the meat from the body. But on an herbivore, they're dull and short or long for defense, or they don't even have them. Now, on humans, we do have canines, but they're very short and they're very blunted. They're not meant for the tearing of flesh. Now the big one, let's look at the molars. On carnivores, they're sharp and jagged and blade-shaped. My cat, I just had to spend $1,000. Yes, you heard right. I just had to spend $1,000 having my cat's teeth removed because it was allergic to its teeth. I don't get it. I don't understand it. But the cat had horrible breath all the time. And when we looked at it, we're like, oh, my God, the gums are red. The teeth are rotting. And we had to remove most of her teeth other than three of the canine teeth. He showed us the teeth, which was gross. It was really gross. But that's the one thing I noticed is all along the back of the mouth in a cat and in a dog, they don't have the big thick molars, and you know, it's just like razor blades all along their mouth. They're sharp and they're jagged and they're blade shaped. On an herbivore, they're flattened to grind food. And lo and behold, look at our molars. They're flattened to grind food. Now, a lot of people can say that as you got to grind your meat. But that's not what they're designed for. They're designed to grind the plant life down, and then it's mixed with our saliva. I'll go into it later. And then chewing. Carnivores do not chew their food. You ever see a cat? I have a bunch of cats at the house, and we give them cat food. And if it's dry cat food, or I'm sorry, wet cat food, it's like they're a Hoover vacuum. They just suck it right up. They don't swallow, or they don't chew their food. They swallow it whole. But with a carnivore, or with an herbivore, you can't do that. You have to chew it and break it up and break it down and mix it with that saliva. Then we can swallow it. I remember it when I was growing up, chew your food 32 times. That's what we used to do. I remember I count 1, 2, 3, 4, blah, blah, blah. Carnivores don't do that. Carnivores rip the meat, swallow it whole. They don't have the ability to chew their food. We have those molars that grind that food. That's very telling to me. You know, it pains me to tell you, my listeners, that the research I've done, it almost conclusively proves to me we're not designed to eat meat. We're designed to eat the plants, the fruits, the vegetables. The prevalence of cancer, you know, when did that start? There's really no way of telling, but it makes complete sense. We eat meat. Our body's not designed to process it and digest it as quickly as it does the plants that we're supposed to eat. So it sits there and it just rots in our system, inside of us. And it gives us all these pathogens that can lead to cancer. It's a really easy cycle to follow once you look into it. And it took a lot for me to get over the fact that these people that are vegetarians might be onto something. I'm not saying be a vegetarian because the animals, you know, they can't be destroyed. It's horrible to kill an animal. You know what? I hear a lot of people say, well, if we don't stop eating the animals, then the population of the animals are going to explode. I see some truth into that. I really do. Here in Michigan, we have a very, very large deer population, a natural deer population that every now and then needs to get culled. Because if not, they provide a very big hazard to drivers and they kill crops and things like that. But when you're talking about pigs and cows and chickens and things like that, turkeys, we proactively breed these animals as much as we can because we need more and we need more and we need more to keep up with the supply. If we just let them go, they will breed and they will grow, but I don't think it'll be as horrible as it was before. Now let's look at it. I mean, honestly, back in the ancient times, animals didn't have the overpopulation problem. Now I get that the fact that we are a much, much larger in terms of number of species and we have huge cities and huge neighborhoods that encroach on the animal's population, but there's got to be a happy medium here. So what I need, this is what I need from my listeners. I've done a lot of research and I have come to the conclusion based on the research that I found for the people who are against eating meat as opposed to the people who are for eating meat. The people that are against eating meat have their ducks in a row. They are fact-checking, pointing, this is why, this is why, this is why, here is the proof, here is the proof. Where the people that are for eating meat, and trust me, I like these people because I like my meat, but they are, well, this is, look, if we couldn't do this, if we weren't able to evolve, and there's no scientific proof that we were designed to eat meat. I need somebody, one of my listeners, at least one of you has to know or has to be able to give me some proof that, scientific proof, not just what you think and what science, the science community thinks, some tangible proof that we are designed to eat meat. Because everything I'm reading, everything I'm hearing tells me that we're not. Now, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to start a diet here Monday. And my goal is to cut out meat. I'll be honest, I don't think I can do it. You know, I eat a lot of turkey burger, a lot of chicken, again, because I can't eat and my wife can't eat red meat. So my family eats a lot of turkey and a lot of chicken. But I tell you, when we go out to an outdoor barbecue or a party and somebody's barbecuing and all they have is beef and I have a beef burger or a steak, oh my gosh, my mouth is watering right now thinking of that. So this is going to be extremely hard for me to do, to be able to stop eating meat. I'm going to try. But on top of that, it's kind of like eating dairy, because we don't process dairy very well either. And I love my cheese. I really do. I'm not a big milk guy, but I love cheese. See, I just take the fun out of everything. So somebody out there, give me some scientific proof that we were designed and we should be eating meat. Other than, well, it should be, we wouldn't be who we were if we didn't eat meat. So maybe, since we started eating meat, we're not who we should be. I'm just saying. I think the ancients, our ancient ancestors who didn't eat meat, knew a lot more than what we do. What does that tell you? So let me know. Somebody out there, give me some scientific proof. And for those of you who don't think we should eat meat, keep coming at me with the scientific proof. I'm starting a diet Monday. I'll let you know how that first week goes. I'm not anticipating good thoughts. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and I'm going to give you the two paranormal encounters from our listeners that I received this week. Pretty interesting, both from Michigan, my home state, and I've been to both places, which is really scary. That's the scary part, is I've been to both places where this has been seen. So sit back, relax, open that mind. You are listening to The Paranormal Patriot. My name is Tom Bless, and I will be right back. Michigan UFO Contact 3 is now in the works. September 11th and September 12th, 2020, at the Lakeside Resort and Conference Center in Houghton Lake, Michigan, the third annual Michigan UFO Contact. You, my listeners, you have helped make the Michigan UFO Contact a yearly event that has garnered media attention from across this country. So mark your calendars, September 11th and September 12th, 2020, the Michigan UFO Contact. Houghton Lake, Michigan, year number 3. And when you get there, tell them the Paranormal Patriot sent you.
But you already know what it is. Why you tripping, flipping out like I'm a chauvinist pig? Hoping that this could turn to what was never meant to be. I've been honest from the jump. You were chasing misery, living a lie. Should've picked a different guy. Heart emojis turned to tears in a blink of an eye. Said it was cool, we only in it for the fun of it. Rough sex, cuddling, nothing in public. Must have been extra rounds, make you want
to
set
a... Alrighty, as I mentioned on last week's show, I love to hear from my listeners. I always do what I can to help them get the answers they want, or let them hear what they want to hear from my side of the story. Well, this week I had two listeners send me accounts of a paranormal encounter, or a supernatural, I guess it would be. Some of them are paranormal, some of them are supernatural, I don't know. But there's two encounters that I want to go over with you. And the reason that these really hit home with me is because, as I mentioned before, I've been to both places. I spend a lot of time in the summers on the west coast of this state. The west coast of Michigan, if you've never been there, is one of the most beautiful, serene, picturesque places on the planet. With Lake Michigan, which is an inland sea, and the sand dunes, which are just pure, beautiful sands that rival any Caribbean beach on the planet. The sand dunes, the sights, the sounds, the atmosphere. I can honestly say that there is no greater place that I know than a Lake Michigan tourist town. We went to Holland, Michigan, the Holland State Park, just for one night this past summer. And it was amazing. We got there about 4 o'clock and spent the night there, but that night that we went was just amazing. The tourist towns of Lake Michigan are unlike anything you've ever seen. It's like an 80s movie. There's people hustling and bustling. It's just, it's, you got to experience it. Contact me if you want to know more about this, because this is one of my passions, is the west side of the state, because it's unlike anything you've ever seen. But anyway, these two experiences happened on the west side of the state. Now, the first one happened a little bit farther up, almost to the tip of the mitten, I guess you'd call it. But this is from a listener that said, I'd stayed at a friend's place by Lansing for a couple of weeks and decided to take off and head towards the shore of Lake Michigan. And I went up and through the Petoskey area and over to the Upper Peninsula. It was dark by the time I got to Pentwater, which is a small resort town on the shore of Lake Michigan in the western part of the state. I was kind of confused at a stop sign and I lurched to a stop. I started and I stopped. I looked up and there was a police officer stopped to my right. At that point, I decided to make a right turn, then turn into a neighborhood. I then made my way back to the main road and took a right. As I turned back onto the main road, I saw a small hill going up into a wooded area on the left. I saw some sort of animal in the grassy area between the road and the trees. I thought to myself, oh, cool, I'm going to see some wildlife, like a possum or a badger or something. But as I got near it, it seemed to move in a very unnatural way for an animal like that. It moved sort of too fast and too jerky as it ran to the side and then down the hill. It appeared to be brown and a reddish tobacco color, and it was furry. But it also appeared to be much larger than any of the wildlife I would expect to see in that area. As a matter of fact, it almost appeared to be human-sized. Now, after I passed it, I looked in my rearview mirror. The animal had, at that point, stood up on its hind legs and ran across the street, leaning over with its front arms hanging down. To me, it seemed like a classic werewolf-type horror pose. I continued to drive, and I never saw it again. I didn't want to see it again. I had planned on camping out in that area, but no way. I drove over 2 hours before I stopped because I was so afraid. That is from DE in Michigan. Now, DE, there's two things you quite possibly may have seen. The first thought that came to mind was you may have saw a dogman, a werewolf, like you say. Or you may have seen, because both descriptions kind of fit the pattern of either a dogman or even Bigfoot. Now, it wasn't a close personal sighting, but it was, I mean, he gave good description, and I don't doubt DE's sincerity in this report, but I have no idea what you saw. I don't know if it was a dogman, if it was a Bigfoot. As I mentioned before, wolves are known to have been seen walking on their hind legs, but when they walk on their hind legs, their front arms kind of bunch in on themselves. They don't dangle those arms. So, DE, I don't know what you saw, but I don't doubt what you saw, and what you saw was not what I would consider normal. So anybody in the Pentwater, Michigan area, let me know if you've ever seen anything like this, and contact me at ghostseeker4@charter.net. Again, ghostseeker4@charter.net. Now we have one more, and this is from an area that I know very well. I actually had a